Right.
Right. That reminds me, before I forget, right off the bat, I'm going to give a shout out to Matt Kaufman, who has recently published a book, The Campfire Effect, How to Engineer Belonging in a Disconnected World, available on Amazon. I'll plug my own self-publishing.
And we're getting 10% of that if you use our promo code.
Right. Matt doesn't know that yet.
TRTR. 10.
Right.
At checkout.
Right. Good. You're so professional. I guess, should I plug my thing? I mean, as long as we're plugging?
Yeah. I mean, you could either do that now or at the end, whatever you like.
Okay. I'll wait.
Okay.
Okay.
You can't do it now.
The last outpost of reason. Not going to do it yet.
Okay. Episode 24, the St. Grubbins Day episode. In this episode, your hosts Steve and Mal hurtled from point A to point B while exploring ways in which we might translate our feelings for others, the transformation of souls, the importance of touching grass, and, of course, the beatific transmogrification of St. Grubbins. Strap in for the ride to Redacted. Listeners, please be advised there are occasional cuss words in these episodes, so now you know. Do you ever edit these and put things out of the order that we've talked them in?
I don't know if I've ever done that. It's almost like...
It's like cheating.
Almost, yeah, it's like a superstitious / religious feeling that, no, you can't do that.
It'd be like blackout poetry. You can't rearrange the order that the words appear on the page. All you can do is select which ones to highlight.
Right, yeah. Yeah, because, you know, authenticity. I mean, some would say it's bad enough that I'm editing at all, but...
But those people don't know what drivel we talk about for an hour and a half.
Drivel is it? I don't know. I'm a little inclined to resent the word drivel. That would be a negative review, I think, if anybody used the word drivel to describe what we're doing.
Yeah.
It's hard to think of how that would come out well. This is some of the finest drivel. Yeah.
Recently, I've been re-listening to some of my favorite Radiolab episodes.
Uh-huh, Radiolab.
I know.
A fine program.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate to shout them out on our program so many times, but
they're... fine. They need all the help they can get from us.
Yeah. Really, if you guys have never heard of them, you should go and listen.
Right. And do we need them to reciprocate? Not necessarily.
No, we're secure.
Yeah, comfortable.
In our podcast.
Yeah.
Podcasterhood. Anyway, I was listening to the one on translation, and I always have a lot of opinions on translation as a subject.
I did not know that.
Yeah, because, I mean... There's a lot of very interesting points that are raised in the episode. But also, when you apply some of those things to other aspects of communication, it's really interesting. Because, like, when you're talking about your feelings, for example, what you're, you know, doing is an act of translation. You're taking a chemical process that's happening in your brain that gives you a physical reaction. It tickles some of your neurons or whatever, and it might, you know, make your stomach hurt or, like, you know, make you angry or, like, whatever. These, like, physical sensations that we have that make us feel a certain way in our body.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to try and express those things out loud, you have two basic options. You can describe what you're feeling, like informationally, factually, what you're feeling, what is happening, what is causing it. But then you have the other way of doing it, which is like metaphorically describing it and abstractly describing it.
Like poetically.
And, yeah, exactly. My theory, I guess, is that that second way, that describing things poetically, gives you a greater range to talk about what you're experiencing, because you can compare it to non-physical things, you can compare it to larger scale things, and in choosing tone, in choosing scale, like in choosing high or low language, in constructing how you talk about this, you can give a maybe a more accurate sense of what those emotions are doing to you.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's more like impressionistic. Almost.
Yeah, and by having more words, by having a greater literacy and ability to put words together, and maybe even more life experience, more experiences to compare it to, you have basically more colors in your paint box. You have more to work with to express yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so diminished literacy leads to diminished ability to communicate with other people. And I'm only talking about in this one avenue, but we know this for like lots of different things. And as somebody who like works with young kids, I also am aware that like kids who are like traumatized very young have diminished ability to communicate. And we talk about, you know, children learning to communicate as like a really, really important developmental stage for them. It just, you know, the ability to have an experience, and as you're having that experience, to translate it into words, even within yourself, even not out loud, it helps you contextualize what you're experiencing as you're experiencing it. It helps it to become maybe integrated and more familiar and not as jarring and traumatic.
It doesn't even have to be trauma. It could be joy.
Yeah, it could be anything, any experience.
So all of this is reminding me that, so recently Sylvia Orenstein died.
I know this, yeah.
But our listeners may not all know that. Sylvia was and will always be, in my estimation, a wonderful person. Died a little over a week ago, I think, within the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and for our listeners who don't know, this is my mother's cousin.
Cousin by marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Just a wonderful human being. And I think for my money, what made her wonderful, and I only discovered this relatively late in the game, like 2.5 years ago when I ended up doing a sort of clerical task for her, which was
easy. She's a law professor.
Yeah, she was a law professor and a lawyer, and did like defended people on death row, among other things. But the thing is, I found her to be a really good listener in the little bit of, contact we had when I did this a couple of years ago for her. And, so that's a big part of, like, speaking of making connections, or not to make a connection with this merging traffic.
Yeah.
Look at that. Multitasking.
Wow.
Talking about it, doing it.
Yes.
All right. But anyway, some connections you don't want to make. But the human connection, she was really, I found her really relatable, good at listening and also sharing, you know, a moment of like vulnerability or doubt. You know, it's just, it's hard to describe it, but it's like you sense it within the first almost 5 seconds of like meeting or talking to somebody, that they're just interested in people, they're interested in you on a personal level, and it's you know, people use the word chemistry, but she definitely had it, and so much so that at the recent Shiva visit, one of her kids, I think it was, described how a couple of months before she died, she had cancer, she knew she was on her way out at that point, she called a guy, I think his name was Joe, a local butcher, to basically say goodbye, you know, and thank him for the meat he had supplied over the years, and she wouldn't be ordering in the future because she was on her way out. And he was, as the story was told, he didn't say much, he was pretty quiet, and he got off the phone fairly quickly, and then he called the house the next day, and I think one of the kids picked up, and he said he couldn't talk. I'm having difficulty relating this.
Aww.
Because he was crying.
Yeah, may her memory be for a blessing.
Yeah, and it will be.
But yeah, I've been thinking about translation, and specifically about translation as applied to, like, things like communication. When you're taking a thought and translating it into words, or when you're... Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you take something... concrete and you translate it into something abstract in order to express it with greater tonal accuracy or specificity through making it abstract.
It occurred to me that there's a third way. So you can use, you know, informational, you can use sort of poetic to convey emotion, but you can also use dramatic action, the interaction of characters or circumstances. I'm just now rereading, on your suggestion, thank you very much, to try to get out of late night doom scrolling, a little bit more of Carson McCullers, and specifically The Member of the Wedding, and the amount of emotion that she is able to get and convey about her 12-year-old, highly sort of emotional character is just uncanny. I mean, some of it is, I guess a lot of it is the description of this character's feelings, but it's more than that. The writing is so evocative, you know, dialogue and the use of language. It's uncanny. Mm-hmm. It's like, wow, how do you do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something that's difficult about conveying emotion through writing is there's so much information that we disseminate when we're talking in, you know, tone, in facial expression, in body language.
Right.
That you have to...
Yeah, you can't get that on the page.
Well, you have to include it as best you can or not. To whatever effect that you want.
Like you say, it's a translation.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're sitting there feeling something or maybe interacting with someone in person, and then to try to convey that with words on a page.
Yeah. Because you start with zero. I mean, you start with a blank page.
Right.
At this party, by the way, Lior asked everyone who knows how to read Roman numerals to raise their hand, and it was a lot more than he was expecting, and did not favorably decide the argument that he was having with his brother for him.
Wait, which party now?
At the St. Grubbin's Day.
St. Grubbin's Day. Oh, yeah, I think you should maybe, if you want, explain a little more about St. Grubbin's Day.
Sure. Sure, I can do that.
Just to remind listeners.
Not to proselytize on our podcast.
Well, we've already given a plug.
Sure. So Phoenix and I came up with this holiday called St. Grubbin's Day, which grew out of this meme of this. I think the meme was originally a grub in the dirt with like a little speech bubble next to it, but somebody in the version I saw first had photoshopped a little cat over the grub. So, but the speech bubble was the same. So it's this little cat in the dirt saying, "Hi, I'm a grub, and I live in the soil." And so I've been saying it like that, very like MTV, welcome to my crib kind of thing. Which was a TV show, if you missed that.
Okay.
Where like celebrities would show a camera crew around their house. But anyway.
Okay, welcome to my crib.
Yes, that was the show. So, so we had been saying, "Hi, I'm a grub, and I live in the soil," to each other, back and forth, for like several days. And then, you know, I showed them that meme again, and they looked at the cat, and they were like, "Oh my god, he's a grubbin," as in like he's a grub and a kitten. A mix between a grub and a kitten. And I was like, St. Grubbins, and then St. Grubbins Day, and then the Feast of St. Grubbins grew out of that. And so we've just been like going back and forth, making up things about this for like a couple of months. And then like we invited a bunch of people to our home and made them celebrate this holiday with us and made them dress up in like, you know, bug and critter related clothing, and like we had a little trinket swap, and there was like an altar with a pitcher of dirt on it, and like, you know, there was a ceremonial lollipop that I made out of a glass bead and a like lollipop stick, that because I was like, listen, St. Grubbins, like, you know, the followers of St. Grubbins have been practitioners for hundreds of years, but it's 2026 and we live in Redacted, and so we can't just have an unwrapped lollipop out to attract critters. However, that is the ceremonial significance of the unwrapped lollipop, which, like, you use a piece of candy or a sweet. Back in the old day, they would probably use like a boiled sweet or like, you know, a little piece of baklava or whatever. But a little dish of honey, whatever, something to attract little critters. Right. So what you do is you take the lollipop in modern day, and pre-COVID, everyone would have passed it around and given it a lick to activate it, you know, and then we would have left it in a little dish on the altar to attract the critters for St. Grubbins Day. But since we're using a fake ceremonial one, and it's, you know, post-COVID, you know, modern times, you have to adapt and be pragmatic. I gave it a lick, and Phoenix gave it a lick, and then we just left it there. And we made everybody do the, you know, when you put your hands together and you twist your hands so that one of your middle fingers is sticking up and one is sticking down, and you like wiggle them.
Mm-hmm.
We made everybody do that and recite with us, "As above, so below."
So nice.
And
had you made that up beforehand?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh boy.
And so everybody was like, we got a few people who were like, "Is this a thing? Or did you guys make this up?" And we're like, "No, we made it up. This is
okay."
All of the like, you know, don't spoil it for people who have never been here before. If you already know these traditions, I was like, nobody knows these traditions. That was all, you know, a farce.
It was so convincing.
Yes. Yeah.
Like,
we want a franchise. We've already had people be like, "Can I hold my own?" And we were like, "Yes,
oh
we want
God.
That." Our home cannot fit all of the practitioners of Grubbinism. I don't know if we have a name actually for the religion.
Now, what is the? Is there like a what do we call our calendar? Roman calendar?
Yeah.
What is the calendar date of St. Grubbins Day?
It's actually February 28th. We had to hold our St. Grubbins Day feast on the 27th because I had work on the 28th.
Okay.
But that's okay.
All right. I mean,
but it lasts for 8 days, like Hanukkah, because it represents the 8 days that St. Grubbins laid in the dirt and let his flesh be consumed by the things crawling in the dirt, as he achieved a sort of nirvana-like euphoria at being consumed. That's how he was sainted.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's intense.
He gave his body to the things that crawl in the dirt, and so he is the saint of all things that crawl in the dirt.
Well, it's obvious to me that this would have to be the St. Grubbins Day episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Happy St. Grubbins to all those who observe.
Well, happy St. Grubbins to you.
Thank you. Yeah.
So, it does remind me a little of the Radiolab yesterday, that was rebroadcast yesterday, that talking about caterpillars being transformed into butterflies.
Yeah, very appropriate.
But the St. Grubbins having been sort of transformed, metamorphosized into
A saint.
Soil, I guess.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
Yeah. And then we made dirt pudding, you know, like I made chocolate pudding and people crushed up Oreos and put gummy worms in it and
stuff.
Oh my
God. Dirt pudding.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Wow. Okay. And you were probably making connections with people.
Oh, for sure.
Among people.
Yeah.
People responded to this, did they?
Yes, very much so. And I also find, like, adults love a prompt. Because when you're in school, like, you get prompts all the time. And it directs you to think about something a certain way or to form an opinion on something. But as adults, like, outside of, you know, perhaps work, and for most people, like, maybe not even work, you don't really get that as much. And for somebody to organize an activity, whether it's, like, you know, a really structured activity versus, like, a pretty open-ended thing, like, bring your own stuff, or, you know, where I'm going to provide a thing and you can interact with it as you like, however you like, whatever. People love that. Because it's like coloring books, you know?
Right.
Like, you get to exercise a degree of creativity or a degree of participation to your own level of comfort.
It all makes me think of the word play.
Yeah, play is important. Adults don't play as much as kids do.
Right, but I think they're happy when they do.
This is a thing also when I talk about translation and communication skills. I talk about kids a lot because I work with kids.
Right.
But I also, like, it's also crucial for adults, especially adults who did not get that, like, intense, level of engagement when they were developing those communication skills as a little kid. Like, they may need some of those workaround things. They may not be able to express themselves as easily in words. And adults are people too. Like, they also need support. And adults need to play. They need stimulation. They need breaks in the same way that kids need recess. You never stop needing those things. You just stop getting them.
Which is really rough. I definitely, you know, so I work alone in an office.
Yeah.
As you know. And I need breaks. I mean, I tend to think 20 to 30 minutes of, you know, fairly even clerical tasks, but, you know, you have to have enough mental wherewithal to know, okay, I'm going to click on this, and I'm going to look at that, and then I'm going to move this over there.
Yeah.
You know, it's not rocket science, but, you know, you're having to do that, tasks. And because it's work, after 20 or 30 minutes, sometimes I can go for, like, an hour. But it's like, I'm gonna need my break now.
Yeah.
I need my break. You know, so I look at stupid YouTubes or whatever, Facebook. Less and less do I have patience for Facebook, but...
Yeah.
Whatever. I just need to... I mean, and sometimes when the weather's decently warm and I think about it, I'll just go outside and walk around.
Yeah.
And I'm always amazed when I do that. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, this is great.
Sky.
Why are we not doing this all the time?
Yeah, plus there's like a sky out here.
I know.
Here, and there are trees. Yeah. You just forget when you're on a screen.
Yeah.
You're in your monitor screen.
On the internet, we call that touching grass, which is like basically logging off and being out in the real world.
Right.
Grounding yourself in the real world when you get too head up about things on the internet. You remember, oh, I can just turn this electric box off, and then they can't get me anymore.
Yeah.
The things making me angry can't get me.
I call it the grind when I'm working.
Yeah.
You know, and not necessarily that negatively, but there's some negativity in that.
Yeah.
After a while, you need a break from the grind.
Yeah.
So, I mean, some grinding is, it's almost pleasurable.
Yeah.
And it's definitely...
And we've talked about this.
Yeah.
We've sort of Puritan-like talked about the glory in drudgery.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Do you find, I mean, so, yeah. For this party, I wanted to wear the giant cicada wings that I had made previously for a Tooth Fairy costume, because I thought it was appropriate for St. Crispin's Day. And I couldn't find the harness that the wings attached to. And I don't know where the fuck it is, but, so like 30 minutes before everyone showed up, I had to very quickly engineer a harness, and it should have been easy because I put snaps on the wings so that I could make another harness and attach them to another thing if I wanted, and detach them from the harness if I was like sitting on the train or something and needed to take them off, and they could easily be reattached. However, I didn't have the right, I was missing one single part to like put new snaps on something, so I was like, fuck, the very like thoughtful mechanism that I put in place when I created these things to allow me to do exactly what I'm trying to do right now won't work right now. So what do I do? And so I tried a couple of different things in very quick succession, and I felt that like laptop heating up feeling of my brain of like things like thoughts connecting very quickly and also like working very hard and to build those connections, because connections come easily to me. I have a very high pattern-seeking brain, and so I'm good at making patterns, making connections. But I was having to, like, work harder at it, and it feels good. Like, that's always the stuff that I like best about costume making, about mixed-media sculpture, is the engineering aspects. When you have a set of constraints because of what you're working with, like, you know, this thing needs to go in the oven, but it can't go in the oven if I have already put this on it, and so I need to do it before, and then how do I make sure I can then do this to it, like, you know, all those kinds of things. Those are my favorite parts of working, because you get that pleasurable laptop heating up feeling.
Nice.
In your brain.
I mean, it's interesting, as I hear you talk about this, you know, the positive feeling you have about it. I mean, I'm guessing that must be very related to the fact that having done it before, or just knowing that you this is what you have to go through, and then you have the real pleasure of having the finished thing at the end.
Sure.
So it's like, you know, the pleasure of baking something. You're going to have the cake. And I'm also reminded of what... I'm just free associating here for a change, of what Mark Twain said about, like, the difference between work and play.
Yeah.
So, like...
Wait, we should say what he said.
Okay.
Said...
Something... Yeah, go ahead.
Work is everything a body is obligated to do and is obliged to do.
Right.
And play is everything a body is inclined to do.
Right. Right. Or he might have even said not obliged to do, but whatever. Yeah. You know, what if like I had a job where I had to look at random YouTubes? You know.
And there are people who have those kinds of jobs.
Yeah, I guess so. When I feel I could imagine I could come to resent it. It's like, all right, you got to log in, you know, 2 hours of looking at random, and then you got to write a thing down, and I don't know.
Yeah, that's. I mean, that is something I worry about when it comes to entering into professional creative fields, and why like freelance artistry is like basically the only thing that appeals to me, because I know that I jokingly say this a lot. I'm like, you know, do what you love, you know, for money, and you'll learn not to love it anymore.
Yeah, subverting that saying, do what you love.
And you'll never work a day in your life.
Yeah.
It's like, do what you love and you won't love it anymore.
Right.
Because I know that I get burnt out, and I also know that if I have to do something reliably day in, day out for my livelihood, and there's a threat of, and then you could be homeless if you don't do it, I will not love it anymore. Because at that point, you're no longer doing it when your body is inclined to do it. You're no longer doing it when your mind is like, oh, I have a great idea, you're like feeling obligated to do it.
Right.
And then you will get burnt out. You will not love it anymore. So, and there are people who can do that and not feel that way. And I know that I'm not one of those people.
I think most people would be the way you're describing and the way I feel. And as you talk about that, I mean, I feel that joyful feeling about editing this podcast and the writing that I've done. And this reminds me, I need to plug my...
Your lit cast.
My lit cast, which is going to drop today, although... Today won't be available to listeners until probably next
March
week.
March Fool's Day.
Right. So today, March 1st.
March Fool's Day.
March Fool's Day. 2026. TheLastOutpostOfReason.com is my website where I'm going to publish a couple of short stories. One is a work in progress. And then eventually there'll be sort of personal essays and maybe a novella and blah, blah, blah.
You should read it.
Check it out. Yeah, but, you know, I feel lucky to be the work that I'm doing, my day job. I do have enough love of it that it's not...
Your non-podcast career.
Yeah, my day job. It's not excruciatingly painful. I remember running into a person who lives down the block from us at Point A, who had been working at a big sort of video / media company, which I'm for whatever reason, I'm not going to name. And I think she had been working pretty high up in the human resources department. So it was a big corporation, so doing corporate work. And she was talking, this was maybe 10 years or more ago now, could be more, talking about really thinking about retiring. And at a certain point she said, I've decided I'm going to be retiring 16 haircuts from now.
Yes, yeah, you have told me about this.
And she said, the reason is that the work I'm doing, it just deadens my soul.
Yeah.
And I remember... Even, you know, this was at a block party, and I remember, like, hearing this. I even reacted to her this way, but it was like, oh, that does not sound good.
Yeah.
That is, like, that's the worst.
Yeah. That's why we need playtime, especially if you're working a job like that. You can do little things to rehabilitate your soul, to rehydrate or to chip back pieces of it.
Well, but I'm grateful to have my train of thought on this is I'm grateful to have my work be something that does not deaden my soul.
Yeah.
I mean, I have, you know, moments where I, Frank Oz noise.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating, but I mean, it's not even, you know, I've had jobs that were more soul deadening.
I think also perhaps your soul is very elastic and resistant to deadening.
But I don't think it's...
I'm not saying that's the only thing going on. I'm just saying as someone who knows you.
Well, thank you for thinking that. I'll have to ponder. I'll like knock that down and chew it over and bring it back to my den and sort of gnaw on it for a while.
Okay.
In this St. Grubbins Day episode.
Yeah, I think
but, that's the fact that there's something rightly or wrongly, probably rightly, that I feel about the work I'm doing, that it has it has some heart in it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is not true of everything I've ever done as a day job. Mm-hmm. Some things more than others.
Yeah.
But I feel lucky because I know... I didn't even need to be talking to that woman down the block to know that there's no guarantee that you'll be doing that. But, I mean, the thing is, though, you're obligated to try. So she was going to be quitting, and I'm sure she has by now, and retiring. But, you know, in theory, I don't know, I'm not an expert, you only have the one soul.
Yes.
So you don't want to deaden it. people.
That is interesting to think about from a theological point of view. What if we didn't have just one soul? What if, like, I don't know, like, you do have an emergency backup soul?
This was a little bit of the theme of that radio lab.
That's what I was going to say. When they say you don't want to change too much in shedding your earthly impurities when you go to heaven or whatever, because then somebody else is enjoying your afterlife. You have to be enough of yourself. There has to be some intrinsic element to yourself imprinted in your soul that has to survive after death in order to enjoy your retirement from humanity. Yeah. But I don't know. Maybe I'm also thinking about this because I just saw a picture of like a cucumber that looks like basically two cucumbers that are conjoined so that when you slice it, it's like a cell that's halfway through cell division,
right.
Mitosis.
Right.
And so like, and the caption called it a tucumber.
Nice.
And so I'm thinking about that. I'm like, what if you had conjoined souls?
Right, then you wouldn't necessarily completely miss out on your the perfection that someone else has achieved for you.
I think what I'm creating right now is soulmate theory, which is like, you know, you're born with conjoined souls and then the doctor like surgically separates you, and so the other half of your soul that was always meant to be a part of yours is wandering the earth elsewhere and you need to find them or whatever.
So, all right, do we need to, like, find a capper or not bother? We had a lot going on here.
We did have a lot going on.
Connections.
I mean, yeah.
We're going to name this St. Grubbins Day. The transformation of souls.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Translation.
Translation is a big thing.
Yeah, and there's an element of that in there, too, of, like, you know, and if you translate too much... If you translate, you know...
You go too far.
Well, you have to be aware of what it is you're translating. Do you want to be tonally consistent or do you want to be factually consistent? Because you can translate something from one language to another. Yeah. And translate each individual word, but then there are implications within the original language that might be lost or a tone that might be lost. There's a driveway right here that you shouldn't block, perhaps.
Well, I'm aware of it.
Okay.
Don't open your door yet.
I won't. But, yeah. So, I guess, go outside, touch grass, play, invite your friends over. Invite your friends to a coffee shop so you don't have to clean up your apartment to see your friends. Yeah.
Okay.
Be excellent to one another and party on, dudes.
Okay. The positivity.
Yeah.
It's breathtaking.
All
right.
Okay. I love you.
Love you.
Crisp handshake.
Cowabunga.
Cowabunga. Get home safe.
You too. Now you're clear to open your door if you are so inclined.
Great.
Maybe I'll turn this sucker off.
Stop the thing.
Okay.